Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rationing when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A six-pack of Budweiser has a 43% tax. And a fifth of Jack Daniel's whiskey is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Now, why is it that government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like more information about this thing called tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it. All right, we're talking about this thing called rationing. Rationing is coming here to the United States. Indeed, rationing will be imposed worldwide. The reason I'm fairly confident that that'll be the results is historical. And that's because whatever the worst possible solution can be that government could do to create the worst possible effects, that's what the government will do. And they don't do that for no good reason. Don't believe for a moment now that the public officials who impose rationing don't know what they're doing. They know full well what they're doing. Historically, they know that this is the system that makes the most money for them. I mean, that's just where reality's at. Business loves rationing. Oh, my God. And that's because the business model from rationing creates shortages. Shortages create higher prices. I mean, it's just that simple. Take a look at diamonds, for instance. Diamonds have been rationed for as long as I can remember, as long as I can look back into history. Diamond is actually more prevalent in nature. It's more naturally prevalent than rubies. But there's a consortium of people called the De Beers Consortium. And De Beers is a monopoly. And they buy up all the diamonds in the world. And if you produce diamonds, you sell it to De Beers. And if you don't, there's trouble. They'll be held to pay. They've got the diamond monopoly. And monopolies create great wealth, huge industries. The petroleum, the oil industry, used to be a free marketplace in oil. Today, it is a closed monopoly. It is an industry that's dominated by just a few players in the game worldwide. And they then can sit there and dictate and determine what the prices are going to be. They determine what the quantity of oil is going to be. Now, there's no shortage of oil. I've mentioned that to you before. There's 14 trillion barrels that we know about. I don't know how much oil is out there, but I would guess if there's 14 trillion barrels that we know about, there's probably two or three times that amount that we haven't even heard of. We don't know anything about. But that we know about. So the oil shortage and high oil prices in Europe, for instance, are caused by a rationing system called taxes. We talked about that last time. Taxes are an efficient modality in a top-down communist regime of imposing rationing. So you people in England, you don't burn as much gasoline as the average American does because it costs you $10 a gallon. And so naturally you're going to be more conservative than we are here in the United States at $4 a gallon. So they're going to move the price of gasoline here in the United States up, just like you people are paying in Europe. We're going to pay that here in the United States. And that's because the people that are in control of the monopoly can monopolize it and they can set the price. But they can't do that without the help and the consent of government. Now, governments aren't dumb either, because governments get voted out and new governments voted in. So they have a system here in the United States. We have Republicans and Democrats. Now, the reality is we have Republicrats and Demopublicans. They're one and the same. There's no dime's worth of difference between the two. You take a look at George Bush and Bill Clinton, not a dime's worth of difference. Both of them big socialists, big time spenders. Now, one of them calls himself a conservative, and the other guy calls himself a moderate, because nobody wants to call himself a liberal. See, that's got a bad connotation. Liberal, socialist. So, you people out there can see that socialism isn't good. And so, the politician cannot sell you socialism, so he has to sell you conservatism. So we voted for the conservative George Bush. My God, he's worse than Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was called a moderate. My God, he's worse than Franklin D. Roosevelt. So what you get is what the Committee of 300 gives us. And you have a choice between A and B. But there's no choice in the policies that are going to be followed. Those policies are set by ExxonMobil and Xerox and the big multinational corporations. Now, that's called a fascist government. And fascism is a state top-down police power coupled with the corporations. That's the top-down monopoly. This is a monopoly that's enforced by the police power. It's called fascism. Now, whether you call it communism, fascism, Nazism, the Babylonian mystery religion, you know, hang a label on. Socialism, I don't care. It all works the same. It's a top-down system which is imposed upon us, whether we like it or not. Now, some of us make out a little better than others. And so, what we want to see if we can do is solve this rationing problem for you. Because rationing is coming whether we like it or not. And the socialist, fascist, top-down communist modality or model is going to be implemented. It's the worst possible solution to a problem, but it's the solution that's going to be imposed upon us. So we might as well learn how to live with it and learn how to profit from it. So let's take a look at some historical examples. There's one going on right now today as I speak. It's called Zimbabwe. Now, I mentioned this the other day, that eggs, butter, gasoline, matches, cooking oil, spices, sugar, meat, and milk are unavailable. They've got an official price. They've got a rationing system, and there's a national rationing board. And if you get caught violating these rationing laws over here, you get punished. You get fined. You get jailed. You get, you know, penalties. If you practice the Ten Commandment model, if you practice the bottom-up marketplace model, you will be punished. Now, Zimbabwe's retail outlets continue to grapple with shortages as the economy remains on a recession path, with the manufacturing sector still battling against power outages and foreign currency shortages. There was little sign of an immediate relief to the manufacturing sector as a result of a monetary policy statement by Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor Gideon Gono last week, although commentators said measures to do with the liberalization of the exchange rate could bring industrial operations, particularly exporters, back to life. The Zimbabwe dollar, which had been fixed at 30,000 to the greenback, slumped to a historic low against the U.S. dollar, trading at 160 million to the greenback after new measures became effective on Friday last week. The movement in the exchange rate was expected to improve the Zimbabwe dollar cash flow position for most exporting companies, which had previously incurred losses due to the fixed exchange rate. It was also expected to give a new lease of life to other companies battling to survive due to a lack of foreign currency to import critical inputs and machinery parts. Under the new exchange rate policy, exporters and importers can now freely trade foreign exchange in the decontrolled interbank foreign exchange market, but they will use a predetermined list of key sectors for disposal of the foreign cash. Shelves in most major outlets remained empty, with stock levels depressed. Let me pause right there and explain an important factor here. These foreign exchange reserves come into play. Foreign exchange is the dollars and pounds. Let's suppose that we Americans have 50 euros. Well, that's a foreign currency to us, and we can't just readily walk into Walmart and present 50 euros to the Walmart clerk and expect to get change in dollars any more than we could walk in with Mexican pesos and expect to get change in euros. So out in the real marketplace, in the real world, all of the currencies of the world have a marketplace value. Today, if you put that 50 euro bill on the counter and you say, give me pesos, there's an exchange rate. You got to pay the guy his commission, but he will give you pesos or yen or dollars or Australian dollars, whatever it is you want, Zimbabwe dollars. Now, fiat currencies don't have any redemptive value. That is, you can't trade them in for gold or silver coin. So they're floating. They call that a float. They change in value every day as they're bought, sold, and traded in the marketplace. If there's a great demand on yen, that is, a Japanese boat pulls into the, you know, say into Los Angeles, California, Long Beach, California, and they unload, and they need to get a bunch of yen. You go out into the marketplace, we need a billion yen. Well, all of a sudden, the yen is going to strengthen because there's somebody out there wanting them. And that's what the marketplace is all about. When there's more demand than there is supply, the price goes up. That's simple enough. No big mystery there. And all of the currencies of the world are floating out in the marketplace. I remember John Grambush one time put in an order for 100 bags of silver. And the price of silver went up $1.50 overnight. Now, there's millions of bags of silver out there in the marketplace. I mean, here in the United States, junk silver sells in $1,000 bags. So $1,000 face value silver today sells for around 13,000 Federal Reserve Note dollars. So there's a marketplace out there in the marketplace, and it fluctuates every day. Every day. It goes up and down. And that's because of the bottom-up supply and demand modality here in the marketplace. But when John Grambush went into the marketplace and said, I want to buy 100 bags of it, the price went up $1.50 because every time a broker would call somebody and say, hey, I need to buy 5, 10, 15 bags of silver, the guy that's got the silver says, oh, well, yesterday the price was $3,000, but today I want $3,300. So if you want the bag of silver, you got to pay $3,300 to get the bag of silver. Now, these market fluctuations are minor. They're not great. They don't double overnight, but over time, they double. And that's what happens when you go into the marketplace to buy rice. There's rice guys out there that own rice. And when they see that demand is strong, they keep raising the price. That's all. Now, there's a thing called cornering the market, and the Bunker Hunt tried to do that back in the 1970s. And they went out and they bought up all the silver they could get their hands on. Well, that drives the price up because the other players in the game have to pay more for it. That's what a monopoly is all about. So speculators go out into the marketplace and they buy rice. The reason that rice is four times what it was a couple of years ago, I think it's $1.32 the other day I saw, as opposed to 30 or 35 cents a pound here, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, is because speculators, when they saw that a shortage was coming on, they went out and bought a bunch of it. And they're sitting on it. They're holding it. So it's there. And it's just that you don't have it and you don't have access to it. So if you want it, you got to pay $1.32 rather than 32 cents. Now that's how that game is played. And that was brought on by this globalization. Globalization. Now, the Zimbabwe dollar, they keep printing more and more of them, and there's no limit to how many you can print. So they come along and they say, well, the official rate is 30,000. And if you trade at something less or something greater than that, then you're dealing on the black market. Well, the black market is the free market. It's where is reality? Remember, the black market and the free market are synonymous terms. And the free market is where reality is located, irrespective of a political shortage or a physical shortage. Reality is, you want it, and here's the price. Last time I mentioned, I was out in the middle of the Mojave Desert. Gasoline was $2.50 a gallon, which was about double what it was at both ends, at Kingman and at Bishop, California, in Kingman, Arizona. You know, it's about 200 miles between those two towns. And if you take off and you haven't got a full tank of gas, you know, if you're from Chicago and you expect that 10 miles down the road there's going to be a gas station, you get surprised. So you get out there in the middle of the desert and all of a sudden the price of gas doubles. Well, that's what the market will bear in the middle of the desert. It won't do that in downtown Los Angeles. And so the state comes in and they have to have what they call foreign exchange. So when Zimbabwe exports, let's say, oil, of palm oil, they get paid, but they ship it off to Brazil, and the Brazilians pay them in Brazilian money. And they ship some off to South Africa, and they get some South African money. These are called foreign reserves, and these foreign reserves have a price. The Zimbabwe dollar is valueless, $160 million to the U.S. dollar. I mean, you know, for practical purposes, I mean, it's just confetti paper. Probably more valuable using it for toilet paper. So the Zimbabweans, in order for them to get anything into the country, their money is no good. Their money has collapsed. They have to use foreign exchange. Now, they have to ration the foreign exchange. So the banks that end up with these British pounds, and German marks, and Russian rubles, and a Japanese yen, and American dollars, those are hard currencies. And those currencies they have to use to buy things that they want to import into the country. And so they import into the country those things which they determine to be the most important. And then other things, you know, like eggs, butter, gasoline, matches, cooking oil, spices, sugar, meat, and milk, they don't import. And so there's none of that on the shelves. So the local people get paid in Zimbabwe dollars, which are valueless. And as soon as they get paid, they run right down to the store and they buy anything that's available. That's why the stores are always empty. The shelves are empty. Because the money's valueless. So bad money drives out good. Now, the reason I'm betting on it here in America is because our balance of payments deficit here, we're spending $1 trillion, that's $1,000 billion, and buying stuff and bringing it into the country. And today there's no shortage, there's just plenty of everything. But we only export $200 billion, so there's an $800 billion a year deficit. Now, one of these days, our economy will collapse, and it will collapse because we're unable to meet our payments. Balance of payments is just one of them. And when we're unable to meet that balance of payments, all of a sudden, the American dollar will be valueless on the international market, or nearly so. It won't be valueless, but nearly so. And and then the Germans will say, well, we'll sell you machinery, but you got to pay us, you know, COD. And well, what will you take? Well, we'll take Japanese yen, or we'll take Russian rubles, or we'll take Chinese renminbis, but we will not take American dollars. And so all of a sudden, we will be put on COD. Now, our government then will have to decide, well, what's important? And I think you're going to find that the importation of coffee will not be as important as the importation of, say, gasoline, maybe. And so then they'll have to impose rationing, ration the shortage, which is what happens every time you get off on practicing communism, which is, you know, a fiat currency. When you get off here on the central banking, heavy progressive income tax, free education for all children in public schools, you know, you put these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto into operation, you get a result that comes from it. Now, they've gotten that in Zimbabwe. You see it coming on in South Africa. In fact, we see it coming on worldwide. Now, you couple that with Bible prophecy, and here's our Creator. He says, well, here's what's going to happen. So it's in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And he talks about a famine that is so great worldwide that we will see widespread cannibalism. Human beings eating human beings because of food shortages. All right. Now, to most of you people who were raised in the Mr. Rogers, Sesame Street, Barney era, that's incomprehensible to you people. You cannot grasp that. It goes right over your head. This guy's a lunatic. So let me point this out, that here in America today, we do not have a value. We do not place a value on privacy and on the Fourth Amendment. Our founding fathers created a Fourth Amendment, and George Bush overturned it with the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. And we accept it. And you people will line up to get your national identification card so that you can do your public service and you can share the shortage with everybody else. That's the way you've been taught and trained. Those of us that are older than that recognize that there was another system in place before Barney, Sesame Street, and Mr. Rogers. It was the Ten Commandments system. So you people have all been raised and trained as communists. It's a part and parcel of your education system. It is the tenth plank. Free education for all children in public school. That's an oxymoron. We spend more money for children in public school than anybody else in the world. On average, $10,000 per student. Nobody else in the world spends that kind of money for free education. There's nothing free about it. It's a very expensive education. But it's not paid for directly by you. It's paid for out of your tax dollars. Now, that's easy enough to pay a teacher. All you got to do is just print up the check and pass it out. Now, where the rubber meets the road is when the teacher goes into Walmart and takes the goods off the shelf, the mayonnaise, the mustard, the butter, the gasoline, the cooking oil, takes it off the shelf. At some point in time, you can print up much more paper than you can actually put milk, meat, sugar, and spices on the shelf. And in America today, the disparity between the amount of paper available and the amount of goods available is 98. You got $98 to buy, well, you got $100 to buy $2 worth of goods on the shelf. So you're going to have rapid inflation, and when you have this rapid inflation, which is what you see with rice, price of rice goes from 30 cents to $1.30 in 2 years. Rapid inflation. Pretty soon the government will step in with rationing. And when the price rationing over here becomes unpopular, which is the logical thing to do because it's going to increase more production. A farmer who says, geez, I was getting 15 cents a pound for my rice and I was selling it and they were retailing it for 30 cents a pound. Now I can get 60 cents a pound for my rice, so I'm going to, four times as much, so I'm going to go out and produce more rice. Now he's not going to produce more rice when the official price is held at 15 cents. He's just not going to do that. See, his costs are going up. Fertilizer goes up. Farmers who are getting paid, you know, $26 a bushel for wheat now, they're finding out that the price of gasoline is doubled. The price of fertilizer is doubled. So the big profits that they thought they were going to make, they're not making. They evaporate in this inflationary hell that is created by our Federal Reserve System, by our central banks. There's no profits to be made off of inflation, at least not at our level. That's done by government at their level and banks. Now, keeping in mind now that Gono said last week that he expected the situation to improve as a result of the new foreign currency policy, as well as other measures meant to resuscitate the ailing economy. The solution to the Zimbabwe economy is to take it off of communism and put it back onto the free marketplace, like the Chinese did and the Russians did, which revitalized their economies. That's why they're growing at 10% a year. The Russians are adding so much foreign exchange. I don't know, it's something like I think it was $10 billion last week. They've been adding $3 billion a week to their foreign exchange, $150 billion a year. We Americans are going in debt. The Russians are making profits. Now, once they got off of communism and onto free markets, you know, all of a sudden things turned around for the Russians and the Chinese. And it'll turn around for the Zimbabweans. When they get off of communism and go back to the Ten Commandment model, they'll prosper. The same thing will happen here in America. You know, if at any time we go back to practicing the Ten Commandment bottom-up marketplace model, things will turn around dramatically and in short order. So Zimbabwe's Attorney General over a month ago revealed plans to tighten the country's law to control escalating prices of basic goods and essential services, including a jail term for retailers or manufacturers charging prices above those stipulated by the government. So the government sets prices, not the marketplace. Well, bureaucrats in government, they don't know what the hell the marketplace should be charging for a particular good or service in order to stimulate production. The marketplace works automatically. If you just leave it alone, the marketplace will determine how much is to be produced. There's no shortage of gasoline. I told you last program or two at the back that we had 24-cent gas in this country. You could have 24-cent gas again in a free market. But you're not going to have it with communism. You never have in the past, you don't now, and you're not likely to in the future. But you're not going back to the Ten Commandments and the free market. You're going to go onward and upward to more restrictions, more communism. So as a capitalist shark, I look around and I say, well, we're going to have more shortages. So therefore, we're going to have more rationing. So if we're going to have rationing, then I have to adjust my economic model to the rationing rather than the free marketplace. So, you know, I'm sorry that I prosper at your expense, Joe and Sally, but, you know, it's your own fault. I mean, you're bringing this on yourself. The American consuming public. I mean, you're the voters. You're the people that are voting these policies in. These are the policies that you wanted. That's why you voted for Franklin D. Roosevelt. These are the policies that you wanted. This is why you voted for Bill Clinton, George Bush. Now, somebody said the other day, well, we're going to vote this Bush guy out and we're going to vote for change. Well, okay. Do you mean Barack Obama is going to bring about free market reforms? He's going to abolish the second and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto. We're going to abolish the Federal Reserve and the income tax and go back to gold and silver coin and practicing the Ten Commandments. That's what Barack Obama is going to bring you. I don't think so. I think you're going to stick with the income tax and the central bank just like George Bush did. And as a result of that, you're going to have the same results that the people in Zimbabwe have. Same results the Chinese and the Russians had. Same results that the Romanians and the Cubans have. And they've got a socialist president down in Venezuela, and you Venezuelans now are learning how socialism and communism, you know, they're just kissing cousins. And you got shortages down there in Venezuela. 12-cent gas and shortages everywhere else. Now, current market-wide shortages have created an environment of fear in the country with the arrest of business executives for violation of price controls, having added to increasing shortages as a result of a slowdown in production. Highlighting such fear was a recent spate of advertisements by key producers of basic commodities disowning the trading of their foodstuffs on the black market, on the free market. They're disowning the trading of their foodstuffs. Unilever Zimbabwe, a subsidiary of Unilever Southeast Africa, recently issued a public notice saying it was sticking to controlled prices for its products, warning retailers and the public against charging more than the stipulated prices. We urge anyone who is overcharged for our products to report to the police immediately, Unilever said in a notice which had a schedule of prices approved by the National Incomes and Pricing Commission. Dairy Bond Zimbabwe, a subsidiary of the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange listed Dairy Board Holdings, also issued a notice saying, due to the hyperinflationary environment and supply challenges, what that supply challenges mean is shortages, it has come to the company's attention that milk and milk products are being sold at prices way above the official approved levels. Bread maker Lobel's Bakery, whose executives have been arrested several times for overcharging, also came out with a plea to direct the police to retailers violating price controls on its products, saying that it was complying with the law. Surprisingly, most key products by these companies are scarcely available on the official market. So here's the official price for milk, $4 a gallon, but there's none available. Here's the official price for gasoline, $237,000 in Zimbabwe dollars for a gallon of gas, but there's none available. But for $10 a gallon in South African money, there's all the gas in the world. No shortage. So again, the free marketplace trumps. And here in America, where we have the biggest agricultural crop in our country now, is marijuana. $37 billion a year, outstrips wheat by about $6 billion a year. $32 billion for wheat, $37 for marijuana. So again, the marketplace from the bottom up sets the price for marijuana. Now, the minute that the government gets involved in price controls or gets involved in rationing, whether it's by taxation or by laws, you have shortages, you have disruptions in the marketplace. And that's just the way reality is. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School teaches and offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about rationing. So we've come to this conclusion, or at least I've come to this conclusion. I'm going to pass it on to you. You're going to have rationing, and you're going to have this communist top-down system imposed upon you, whether you like it or not. So what is it that is going to be in short supply? Not everything's in short supply. Air is in plentiful supply. It's not being rationed. Water is in plentiful supply, and in most places it isn't being rationed, although in some places it is. So when something is in abundant supply, you don't need to fear rationing. When something is in short supply or likely to be in short supply, you can rest assured that it's going to end up being rationed and you're going to have a shortage. So to preclude the shortage in food, what you do is become self-sufficient in food production so that you produce your own. That way you have plenty. Let me give you an illustration. In World War II, Great Britain, listen to this list. The things that were being rationed, the most common things, were bacon and ham, meat, cheese, margarine, butter, milk, sugar, jams and jellies, tea, eggs, and sweets. All right, let's take a look at each and every one of these. In the early stages, what happens is you got a war going on, you got rationing, or you have an economic collapse, or for whatever reason. Everything that's being imported is going to be rationed. Everything that's imported. In America, for instance, we now import 99% of our shoes. You can rest assured that shoes will be rationed. All right, so if we're pretty confident that shoes are going to be rationed, how long will this rationing take place? If you listen to FEMA, they ask questions like, are you ready? Here's an article from FEMA. Are you ready? You may need to survive on your own after a disaster. This means having your own food, water, and other supplies in sufficient quantity to last for at least 3 days. Boys and girls, 3 days is not an emergency. 3 days is an inconvenience. Local officials and relief workers will be on the scene after a disaster, but they cannot reach everyone immediately. You could get help in hours, or it might take days. But they don't think it's going to be more than 3 days. Well, now, in ordinary circumstances, that's probably true. But what we're talking about here, a collapse of our economy is not going to be a three-day event. Now, our economy began to melt down in August of 2007. The economy in 1929 began to melt down in October of 1929. It didn't reach the bottom until March of 1933. So let's try it. It's October of 29 to October of 30, 31, 32, until March of 33. So October, November, December, January, February, March. 3.5 years. So it took 3.5 years to get from the top to the bottom. Now it stayed on the bottom with some little spikes, you know, and every time there was a little spike, some government bureaucrat would say, well, the depression is over. We're on our way now. Now, it bounced along on the bottom from March of 1933 to September of 1937. Let's count that one up. March of 33 to March of 34, 35, 36, 37. That's four. March of 37, March, April, May, June, July, August, September. That's 6 months. That's 4.5 years. So it took 3.5 years to reach bottom, 4.5 years on the bottom. Then from September of 37, there was a slow gradual climb out of the depression until December of 1941. That's when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Then there was a rapid acceleration from December of 41 until we reached full employment sometime in 1942 or 43. The depression the last time was a long, long drawn out affair. Now, all of the factors that the economists are reporting on the economy today are worse than the factors that were in place in the 1920s, just prior to the collapse of the economy in 1929. All of the leading economic indicators of industrial production, commodities, banking, housing, I mean, you name it, they're all worse than the 1930s. So what does that tell you? Well, historically it says it's going to be as bad as or worse than the last time. Now, that's not good. It's not good at all. And so you need to position yourself in a place where you can avoid the kinds of contractions in your living standard that are going to take place for most Americans. And I say most Americans, and that's because it isn't that it has to happen, it's that most Americans want it to happen. Most Americans are voting for it to happen. It's their communist upbringing, it's Barney, it's Mr. Rogers, it's Sesame Street. It's paper money. It's income tax. It's the national central bank. It is the part and parcel with the system that we have created in this country. That's what's causing it. Now, our common sense would say, well, then we just need to change that cause. But you see, boys and girls, you people, honest to God, believe that the cause of the problem is the Ten Commandments. It's the free marketplace. See, all of your lives you've been trained that it's this marketplace, it's speculators, it's the black market, it's the wicked and the evil that we see around us that is promoted by gold and silver. And that the solution to the problem is easier money, lower interest rates, that it's paper money, central banking. See, and because of that training, because of that education that you have received, that's what you're going to opt for and love it. You'll love it. You see, you've been taught and trained that your government is the solution to your problem. All you've got to do is go out and vote in the most important election in our history. And that's what they told us last time, 2004, most important election in our history. That's what they told us in 2000. Most important. You know, that's the words that have been bandied about for as long as I've been around. This is the most important election. Get out and vote. Did it ever occur to you that voting is part of your problem? That maybe if you quit voting, maybe some of your problems would disappear? See, right away, your brain goes into overload and you say, oh my God, this guy's some kind of a terrorist. This guy's nuts. He doesn't want to vote. And we all know that voting solves our problem. I mentioned this to you a couple times back. I said, excuse me, use your head here, Sally. Use your head, Bob. If voting in the 2008 election would solve all of our problems, we would not have any problems to solve, because if voting were the solution, we have been voting for 230 years. Therefore, voting would have eliminated the problem long ago. But voting did not eliminate the problem. All right? So since voting hasn't eliminated the problem and we have this economic problem, and we're assured that voting is going to solve this economic problem, it's pretty obvious that it hasn't in the past, isn't now, and isn't likely to then in the future, is it? Now, I know you have high hopes, and you hope that Barack Obama is going to change things, but he's not, and he can't. I mean, even if he wanted to, which I don't think he does, but even if he wanted to, he couldn't change it. All right, now you can change it. I can change it. All of us can change it. Let's take a look here at milk. I have a milk cup, and I sell milk cups. There are people who buy my milk cups. Those people want to have their own milk. They do not want to pay $4 a gallon for BST milk with steroids and all kinds of chemicals and additives and pasteurized and homogenized out of the store. They want to buy whole, raw milk. And they can't buy that in most places because the marketplace has rationed it. You can buy pasteurized, homogenized milk, but you can't get whole, raw milk. It's rationed. It has been for most of my life, boys and girls. And that rationing is the law. It's against the law to sell this raw milk in the marketplace. So government has imposed rationing, and they have imposed upon you homogenized, pasteurized milk. As a result of that, the thousands of dairymen that used to exist in this country are all gone. All you have left in the marketplace producing milk are the big mega dairies. People with 5 milk cows don't exist. People with 5,000 milk cows exist. Those are called milk shits. All right, that's a monopoly. And that monopoly was created by government rationing the marketplace. They outlawed it, just like they do in Zimbabwe, and punish people for selling raw milk. So as a result of that, raw milk sells on the black market, on the free market. And it sells for, get this now, it sells for $9 to $16 a gallon. There is no shortage in America of fresh, raw, unpasteurized milk. Just like there's no shortage of marijuana in this country. But you got to buy it on the black market. You got to buy it in the free market. The regulated government-controlled market doesn't have it available. All right, so there are people out there that do not want to pay $9 to $16 a gallon for this fresh, whole, raw milk. So they buy their own milk cow. Now, when rationing occurs, that is when the big mega dairies can no longer get corn to feed their cows to produce their milk because we're using the corn to produce biofuels so you can burn it up in your gas tank rather than drink it at the table, then you're going to have milk rationing in the stores. That's to keep the price at $4 a gallon. Now, these big mega dairies over here are working on low margin. And so the official price for milk is going to be $4 a gallon. Let's just pick a number. And then the dairies are going to be at a point where they're producing this milk for $4.10. So they're going to quit producing it. And your store shelves are going to be bare. There isn't going to be any milk to buy, period. None. Good or bad. You'll have rationing, and we'll all share the shortage equally, except for the people that have their own milk cow. And they will have all the milk that they want. Now, the solution then, as I mentioned the other day, instead of standing in line waiting for your handout, your ration at the food bank, why don't you get off your dead ass and go to work? This is a wild concept for Barney fans. We're going to get up off the couch and we're going to go outside and we're going to plant our garden. We're going to get up and go out and milk the cow. We're not going to watch Sesame Street. We're not going to watch Mr. Rogers. We're not going to watch Barney. We're going to go to work. We're going to produce so that we have an abundance. Children, children, wake up. If you want abundance, it comes from production. You're not producing any tomatoes sitting on the couch watching Barney. And you're not teaching your children to produce. So we have two generations of people here in the United States that don't have any concept at all of going out and producing. Their concept is, well, I need to stand in line and wait for my allotment. I need to write a letter. I need to vote. I need to complain to my congressman. Well, okay, you know, I don't have time to go vote. I'm busy working, milking my cows and producing. I don't have any shortage of meat, milk, butter, and eggs. I have such a surplus of eggs. Let me tell you what my surplus of eggs is. In our household, we don't eat a large number of eggs. We're not big egg eaters here. But I've got, I think there's 22 chickens out there. Those chickens right now, summertime, they're producing about a dozen eggs a day. Well, we eat maybe two or three eggs a day. And so let's just multiply that up. I eat three eggs a day, and we produce a dozen. So we have a surplus of 9 eggs a day, 7 days a week. That's 63 eggs a week times about 6 months, which is about 24 weeks, which is 1,512 eggs of surplus. What do we do with all these eggs? Well, we take them out and we feed them to the dogs. I mean, you people are spending $3 a dozen for eggs in the store. I got two dozen chickens out here, and I'm throwing away 1,500 eggs a year. Probably double that, but, you know, at least that many. I'm not standing in line showing any shortage. All of the people that I know of in my neighborhood over here have a backyard chicken yard with a few chickens in it. Now, they may eat more eggs than I do, I don't know, but, you know, we have all the eggs here that we want. Let's take milk. As I speak, I've got three cows out here milking. I got calves on them. I bring in 3 gallons a day. We probably drink here at our household, probably drink 1 gallon a day for sure, and I'm supplying another guy, my boy, with a gallon. He doesn't drink as much, but, you know, let's say it's 2 gallons a day, and I'm bringing in three. So what do we do with that extra gallon or gallon and a half a day? Well, we feed it to the chickens. We feed it to the dogs. And we dump it out on the garden to fertilize the plants. Do I have any shortage of milk? None. Now somebody's going to say, oh my God, Mr. Gordon, you're dumping $9 a gallon milk out on your plants? Yeah. Why not? What else am I going to do with it? I can't drink it. Well, you could give it to the poor. No. You people, you don't understand. You don't understand. Let me explain this to you. One time, I had an orchard out here, see? And I was, had a great surplus. You know, I got about 50 or 60 fruit trees. I can't eat all the fruit off those trees. So, the fruit's falling on the ground. So I went over to Mackey's and I put up a sign on the bulletin board and I said, gleaning, come over and pick up the fruit. People would call me on the phone and they would say, do you furnish the boxes, the ladders, insurance, and do you package it? No, I don't do any of the above. Not a single person ever came over and picked up one apple off the ground. One pair, one share, not one. I used to milk 5 or 6 cows and then take the milk, put it in 5 gallon buckets and deliver it to the neighbors, and they said, they complained that there wasn't in gallon jugs. I had one guy tell me that he wanted it in quart jars. He wanted it in quarts. I said, sir, I'll give you the milk, I'll go out and milk the cow, but I didn't charge, I gave it away free. And the people would steal my buckets, wouldn't wash the buckets out, and complain to me because it wasn't in gallon jugs. Don't sit there and tell me I should give it to the poor. Hell, the poor won't take it. They're on food stamps, where they can get it out of the grocery store, where they can get some guy to wheel it out there and put it in the trunk of their car, for crying out loud. They're sure as hell not going to come over here. They're not going to bend over and wash a bucket out. They're not going to take a 5 gallon bucket and divide it up into 5 gallons and put it in their refrigerators. They're not going to do that. I've tested that. No, they want to stand around and take the free handouts, but I want to warn you up front that this is coming to an end. That's all. All you Barney people, all you Barney generation out there and Sesame Street, this is coming to an end. And reality is going to smack us up alongside the head here. There's going to be shortages. There's going to be rationing. And there's going to be god-awful high prices. And you people are going to have to live and do without. Unless, of course, you're smart enough to get a cow. Now take a look at this again. Wartime Britain. Bacon and ham. And they couldn't get. Now bacon and ham are unclean and you ought not to be eating them anyway. And if you want bacon, eat beef bacon. Meat is going to be in short supply. So during World War II, my grandparents, I was raised by my grandparents, they always kept 100 chickens out in the backyard. We ate those chickens and we ate those eggs. So we had all of the eggs and all of the meat that we wanted. And my grandmother, when we ran out of those 100 chickens, would get another 100 little baby chicks, and she'd raise those up. And, you know, if you people that are watching Barney and Sesame Street, the idea of raising some chickens is so foreign and alien to you, I know that this sounds crazy. But the difference between rationing and having an abundance is in getting up off of your dead you-know-what and going to work. That's all. Now, that's in the food area. Now, let's take a look at this thing of things like sugar. Sugar now in the United States, we produce some sugar here in the United States, especially by sugar beets. But during World War II, it came in from Hawaii. It came in from South America, from sugar cane. It was called CNH, pure cane sugar from Hawaii. Now we have sugar beets. Well, now the sugar beets are being GMO'd. We will not be buying any more sugar, or at least not beet sugar. We might buy cane sugar, but not beet sugar. And this cane sugar is going to cost a little more money. So it makes sense for you to stockpile sugar while it's in abundance right now. So if you figured out how much you need for a four-year supply, keeping in mind that the downtrend in the Great Depression from 1929 to 33 is 3.5 years, and that the bouncing on the bottom was another 4.5 years. Boys and girls, the idea of having a 7-year supply isn't as strange as it might sound. I recommend a 4-year supply with a means of production. You should have some raised beds and seeds so that you can produce your own. You should have your own milk cow. You should have your own chickens. You should be 100%, or as much as is possible, independent and not dependent. Independent rather than dependent. Now, what our government and communism teaches is dependency. You always depend upon Walmart. You always depend upon somebody else to produce it for you. You always depend upon the marketplace for your job. You always depend upon, I'm going to have a job. But boys and girls, if you don't have a job and the marketplace collapses, or the economy collapses and the marketplace fails you, and rationing is imposed, what are you going to do then? And we'll talk about what are you going to do then next time here on The Law Hour, an editorial review talking about rationing. Meanwhile, back on the farm, let me remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian, non-commercial law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.